KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, Kuskokwim tribes are busy collecting harvest data to help with in-season management. Also, a parcel of land that contains valuable fish habitat in the Kodiak Archipelago is now safe from future development. That and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K through 12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska.
Increased control over natural resources like fish is a top priority for Kuskokwim tribes. One way to move in that direction is through collecting harvest data while the fishing season is happening, helping with the difficult job of what's called in-season management. KYUK's Anne Rose MacArthur takes us to meet the river's newest data recruits at the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fisheries Commission's annual meeting.
These are the young men who work with us this summer.
The four young men take the floor in front of a large gathering of Kuskokwim tribal representatives. Missing from the group are two young women who couldn't make the meeting, Kathy McIntyre and Colleen Andrew of Gweethluk. Each of the men and women served as community harvest monitors in their villages.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
I would wait at the boat landing where most of the fishermen were bringing in their fish.
Benjamin Agima collected data in Napakiak.
And I was interviewing fishermen on what their harvesting was like during the opening.
Agimuk and the other monitors would ask how many fish of each species the fishermen caught, how long they were out, and what gear they used. Akiak monitor Mike Williams Jr. says some people found sharing the information inappropriate. It could be seen as bragging, and it's not how some account for their harvest.
They don't really count the fish, but rather look at the fish rack, and when it's filled, then they're done.
But most fishermen would participate. And as the season went on, Nabuskiak monitor Bernard Williams says the fishermen would just see him coming and start talking.
They'd give us the answers right away. They know what we're going to say and do.
Monitors would also collect data on harvested king salmon, the age, sex, and length of each fish. And they'd write down comments like these from fishermen.
We should keep the river open all summer.
Others were just happy to have the opening.
Or we need to be conserving.
The monitors would send the data to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service via a phone app. The feds would then crunch the numbers to help determine when managers could plan the next opening. The program is organized through the Bering Sea Fishermen's Association and is similar to other programs along the river. It's meant to empower tribes, give them a clear view of their catch, provide managers more accurate harvest data, and offer job and leadership training.
There has to be a change around the Kusko because all these closures.
Jackie Larson, age 19, monitored his village of Nabuskiak.
So I might as well step in and learn so our people can have more chances to go out fishing.
Four villages participated this year with plans to expand to more villages next year. At that time, monitors will also collect water temperatures to track shifts related to climate change. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family.
An initiative to conserve one coastal habitat in the Kodiak Archipelago is now complete. The Thorsheim drainage on Fognak Island includes almost 2,000 acres of natural habitat and anadromous waters. It's now safe from development and tree harvest. The executive director of the organization that mediated the agreement, Ellen Kazari, with the Great Land Trust, says the parcel includes nearly the entire watershed.
So it has just that whole variety then of fisheries habitat. So in that area, you find three species of salmon. Right off the coastline, we have continuous kelp beds and eelgrass, which is a great kind of spawning habitat for juvenile fish. And while the salmon and the fisheries are one of our priorities, we also have Dolly Varden and steelhead and Arctic char, so it's just rich with fish.
This conservation effort traces its roots back to the 1989 Exxon Valdez oil spill. After that catastrophe, the Exxon Valdez oil spill trustee council put funds from a civil settlement into helping the damaged habitats recover. That's where the Great Land Trust comes in. Kazari says part of the council's efforts includes commissioning the nonprofit to find valuable coastline habitats and mediate agreements to protect them.
This particular piece of property was scheduled to be logged in 2017 and 2018. By putting it into conservation, it means that it will no longer be logged now or in the future. So it's retiring those rights to subdivide or develop or log or clear cut or whatever other development actions could happen on the property.
UAC Natives Incorporated had owned the Thorsheim drainage parcel. They had also sold logging rights on that land to a company called Transpac Alaska Limited Partnership. With funding from the trustee council, the Great Land Trust arranged for the transfer of ownership to the state of Alaska and the handover of the conservation easement or development rights to the Bureau of Land Management. In return, UAC and Transpac split a total of about $6.3 million between them. UAC president and CEO Gabe McKilley says the corporation had tried and failed before to conserve the land, and he's satisfied with this most recent development.
I think it was a fair price to us and a fair price to the state in what they got in return. This is very unique land. This is not normal. This is not harvested, not touched. So it's got a value that you really can't place a number on.
The Fognak Island parcel is just one of the Kodiak properties the Great Land Trust has identified for conservation. This year, the organization finalized a similar conservation easement transfer for Termination Point, a popular hiking spot. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Subsistence hunters are still barred from killing humpback whales, even after the National Marine Fisheries Service removed some populations from the endangered species list due to increased numbers. But who keeps tabs on the whales now? Often the work of monitoring populations falls on volunteers. KFSK's Nora Sachs spent some time in the field, or in this case, on the water, with researchers who have banded together to keep a close eye on these beloved marine mammals.
28-year-old Madison Cosma is perched on the bow of an inflatable raft, aiming her camera at a humpback whale working its way through Frederick Sound, north of Petersburg. She thinks of it like a game, one that requires fierce concentration and a surplus of patience, because whales are constantly moving targets.
It's like playing 2D chess with someone who's playing 3D chess, and they always know who we are, and we have no idea where they are.
She needs crystal-clear shots of its fins, body, and especially the fluke, because each one has a unique pattern. When she gets them, she rattles off numbers to her colleague, who jots them down in a waterproof notebook.
Whale 2 is 13.
A pleasure craft motors over.
How's it going?
Cosma yells across the deck, announcing that they're researchers with the Alaska Whale Foundation, part of a big effort to photograph and document every humpback passing through this section of the Inside Passage.
We just want to let you know we're not just some randos harassing the whales.
Afterwards, once the snapshots are taken, the crew zooms off. A few miles away, there's a whale lounging cooperatively near the surface. The captain idles the boat parallel to it. Cosma sets her camera down, picks up a crossbow, and loads it without a word. She chooses a moving mark on the charcoal-colored mass, takes careful aim, and squeezes the trigger. The arrow sails through the air and appears to glance off the whale's side. It flicks its tail defiantly and disappears with a splash. Cosma retrieves the arrow and removes the specialized tip, or bolt.
The bolt kind of does that big core sampling, kind of like a tree, but this has a barb on it, so once it goes in, it can't come out once it pulls out.
And it worked. It's filled with a crayon-sized amount of glossy black skin and blubber that is bubblegum pink. This is the way to get a biopsy. And Cosma knows that from the outside, it might not look like conservation.
But then if you look on the inside, the crossbow is actually a child's crossbow. It's not that powerful. It's kind of like giving a whale a shot or a bee sting.
And this one tissue sample contains powerful stuff. It will reveal the whale's genetic fingerprint and much about its biology and life history. It's all for a project called the Survey of Population Level Indices for Southeast Alaska Humpbacks. That's a mouthful, but everyone calls it SPLISH, which is a lot more fun to say. SPLISH involves teams from 7 independent research groups, fanning out across the waters of northern Southeast Alaska during the same 2-week period. Their goal is to find out how many humpbacks there are, where they are, and how well they're doing. That's because while most humpback populations were recently removed from the endangered species list, there's very little federal money to keep monitoring them long term. Phil Clapham is a large whale expert with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
The funding tends to go to those species for which we know there's a management problem, which are in some cases in the public eye. So the thing about humpbacks is that, you know, they've come back screamingly well.
But not everyone agrees. Professor Jan Straley isn't as comfortable calling it an ecological success story just yet.
Not in Southeast. Not what I've seen in the last year. I'm not convinced that the whales are doing that well.
Straley is a veteran marine biologist at the University of Alaska and one of the brains behind SPLISH. She and her colleagues have recently noticed humpbacks that look sickly and have fewer calves. She wonders if the population is just reaching carrying capacity or if the conditions in the ocean are changing so rapidly that they're struggling to keep up. Either way, and it could be both, it's too soon to tell.
If it shows that there is an issue with the health of these whales, we've got something big happening. Or maybe not big, at least something's happening that we don't know yet.
For now, Straley and her collaborators in the science community are keeping close tabs on humpbacks in the region, on a shoestring budget, with a lot of help from volunteers. Volunteers like the ones on the inflatable raft.
That good flew to 2 of them, but that last one was weak.
As the sun begins to set, the crew is still on the water, buzzing from GPS point to whale to GPS point. It's been a wildly successful day in the field, their best one yet. They've documented almost 30 whales, snapped over 300 photos, and gotten 2 biopsies. But spending 12 hours with the same 4 people on an inflatable raft the size of a kiddie pool with no protection from the elements can cause even the hardiest of spirits to sag. But then the group gets a special surprise. Big bubbles appear on the sea's surface and start swirling clockwise, forming a perfect circle that perks everyone up.
Sick, huh?
Yeah.
So cool. Oh, there we go.
3 humpbacks emerge from the depths, right in the center of the ring, like the mighty cetaceans of the apocalypse, mouths hinged open to gulp down massive quantities of fish. This is a cooperative feeding strategy called bubble netting, and it is a sight to behold.
Because I'll just be, like, so bummed out, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's, like, a huge group of bubble netters, and then it's just, like, I'm warm again, there's blood in my fingers, there's blood in my toes, I'm pumped, I'm excited, I'm awake, because it's just, it's incredible.
Even after a long day of repetitive wildlife spotting, for Cosma, this feels like something exceptional. In Frederick Sound, I'm Nora Sachs.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you, in part, by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel and KFSK's Nora Sachs in Petersburg. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.